Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Brant Hansen with a Christian vision for masculinity.
I think it's the job that was given to Adam, which is to be the keeper of the garden. You provide life for people around you and security. So people shouldn't be threatened because you're around. The vulnerable should not be threatened because you're around. Women and children should not be threatened because you're around. Like, you should actually make them feel more secure because you're there.
Brant Hansen, next. Radio host and author Brant Hansen believes young men get so many conflicting messages about what it means to be a man, they find it hard to know what masculinity looks like when men are at their absolute best. In his books, The Men We Need and The Young Men We Need, he paints a compelling picture of what men are designed to be. Spencer Dahlke is with Brant Hansen to talk about the book aimed at young men.
What prompted you to write that book?
I was asked because of The Men We Need was a bigger hit than I think any of us anticipated. And so I was asked to write something that was a little shorter, a little punchier. Like when I say punchier, not trying to be hip or anything, it's just I kept it shorter because young guys aren't big book readers. They're not like the big demographic for reading books. So I wanted to make it something that they would want to read that drew them in, because this vision of masculinity, young guys have no clue. They have no idea like what's specifically great about masculinity. And unfortunately, even church culture doesn't tell them most of the time, because in church culture, it's just, hey, guys, you need to be men, stand up and be men, be manly. It's like, okay, but what do you mean by that? So what I'm trying to do is offer an actual vision for masculinity that makes sense. And it doesn't just get caught up in the tropes of it's all about being an outdoorsy guy or cliff diving or something. Like, there's something much deeper and better there.
I mean, young men are still men, you know, so I was curious why the separate book directed at young men, if there was something unique about young men that needed to be addressed or something to that effect.
No, it's really the same message, just made more palatable. And I think it's more intimidating if they pick up something and it's thicker and it's just a bigger book. I mean, so that was the attempt. Also, we made some discussion questions that would work for a Sunday school class or a small group of guys that is tailored for them. So I think it's great for like school discussions or church discussions with younger guys.
So looking at our culture, I guess, a little bit, what do you notice or observe about how we understand masculinity as a culture?
Well, the culture at large has no clue, and that's apparent. I mean, we can articulate toxic masculinity very easily. We can talk about domineering or abusive masculinity, and we should. I mean, it's awful stuff. But even in church culture, it's like we have books about deconstructing masculinity. It's more like, what's the construction, though? Like, are we ever going to say what the thing is, the good thing? And if you don't have a vision for it, how are you supposed to hit it? So what happens now, just culturally, I know this from personal experience and observation, even in Christian schools, like good schools, the guys are eating up like Andrew Tate and stuff, like masculinity influencers, who are horrible examples actually of masculinity. They're exact opposite of what godly masculinity looks like. But because there's no vision put toward them about what godly masculinity actually looks like, they will fall for this other stuff, like being jacked and being a UFC fighter and having cars and women and lots of money and being, you know, just saying stuff. Like, so in the absence of anyone actually writing something that gives the vision of what masculinity actually is, that's what I thought I would write this book for.
You know, as a young man myself, trying to figure out how to be a better man, things like this, I've talked with a number of different people. And one thing that's been the move away from God as creator and more into like Darwinian evolution as the source of creation, and seeing men as no more than another species of animal.
Yeah, it's like men as predators or alpha, this and that. It's just, it's a bunch of, honestly, it's garbage. But unfortunately, even in the church, you can go to men's night. It's like, we need to be men. Men need to man up. And men, like, okay, but what are you talking about? So that's what I was trying to do in the book. I'm glad you were able to take a look at it. But I'm like, taking a shot at this vision of what masculinity is when it's at its best, what we're actually called to. I think it's the job that was given to Adam, which is to be the keeper of the garden. You provide life for people around you and security. So people shouldn't be threatened because you're around. The vulnerable should not be threatened because you're around. Women and children should not be threatened because you're around. Like, you should actually make them feel more secure because you're there. And that includes with your words, for instance. A guy can be all the quote unquote masculinity tropes, like, you know, have the big truck and be a great hunter or be a UFC fighter or whatever. You can be all that stuff or a special forces. But if you make your wife feel insecure when you're around, you're failing as a keeper of the garden. You're failing at your role. Conversely, you don't have to have all that stuff. Talking to a married guy in this case, but like, if you make your wife feel secure when you're around, you're golden. All that other stuff is just it's just trappings. So it's actually good news, because a lot of guys think, okay, I need to have a six pack. I need to be totally ripped. I need lots of money. No, you don't. Women will find a man who provides security very attractive, as it turns out. And I think it's because they intuit what men are supposed to be, what we're made for. So you don't have to be all of that other stuff. You just have to be a provider of security and somebody who's a good keeper of the garden. I think that's the nubbin of what great masculinity is. And I think that's why women respond to it, because they're brilliant and they intuit that.
Intuitively, that kind of makes sense to me. And I want to believe that that's real.
Yeah.
Realistically, though, I wanted to ask, like, really? Is that kind of how it plays out in the real world?
Yeah. Okay. So when you're young, though, with women, young women in particular, they're confused about masculinity, too. So I would encourage them to read this book, too. But they will go for the trapping. So if they want to date the fullback on there, nobody has a fullback anymore. But if they want to date like the tailback or the quarterback, like big, strong guy in high school or the rich kid. Those are trappings of security. You think, oh, he's muscular. He can protect me at a deep level, intuitive level. Like, you're thinking that, but you're not mature enough to realize actually that stuff doesn't work that way. As you get older, women start to really, they're able to articulate, oh my goodness, here's what I was actually looking for. I was looking for someone who provided security. And they can marry that quarterback or marry that big guy who's incredible at all that other stuff. But if he turns out that he flirts with other women, or all he cares about is bodybuilding, or he's just selfish, or he's abusive, like, that guy becomes instantly unattractive to women. Seriously. At the beginning, like in high school or even into college, like, women will go for stuff, but on the surface, they think that's going to provide that security. And then they gradually learn that's not the case. I hope that makes sense. Is that what you were talking about?
Honestly, I was just thinking about an episode of House MD. I don't know if you've seen the show, but there was one episode where he hallucinates like a super attractive woman married to this guy that's in his, like, on his deathbed. And he's like a two. And he says the rule is always tens marry tens, fives marry fives, and you know, things like that. And it's, so is it really about, you know, character? Is it really all that important?
It's hugely important, especially like, again, after you get married, you can have all the trappings of being the super perfect man. But if you don't make your wife feel secure, she won't want to touch you. She'll be threatened by you. She doesn't want to be, because you're now instead of being a protector of the garden, your sphere of influence is your garden. Now, instead of being a protector, you're actually the problem. You're the enemy within. Here's the thing. You don't have to be a domineering guy to be toxic. You can be super passive, and she'll feel insecure because she'll suspect that you won't rise to the occasion, that you won't actually protect her. You're not after her best interests. When I talk about this, by the way, in settings, they can be secular settings, at businesses, or they can be church settings. Women will listen to me as I'm talking about this, and I'm always wondering, hey, what are you thinking? They're looking like, And at the end, invariably, they'll come up to me like, how do I get a copy of this from my husband? How do I get a copy of this from my boyfriend? Because they do resonate with it. They're like, that is exactly what I'm looking for. This is what I wanted. It's just that when you're young, unless you're taught well about what you're actually looking for, to understand it, you will go for the trappings of it, what you think is going to provide security, but that may or may not work.
I know you write a lot about the six decisions that a man must make in order to kind of develop healthy, godly masculinity. Yeah. Before we get there, I wanted to ask about older women, and I assume probably also older men start realizing what matters is a person's character. Would you have any thoughts about some of our listeners who may be younger about how to train their eye to appreciate character?
Yeah. Okay. So I want you to know, regardless of how old you are, you are becoming something. And God is very interested in who you're becoming. In fact, I think that's his primary interest, who we're becoming. We're being formed somehow, but we're being formed by what we pay attention to. Your attention determines who you're becoming. So what you're attending to now, you might be 20, you might be 25, but what you're attending to is shaping who you're becoming. That's your ultimate freedom, actually, is what a human being gets to put his or her mind on. But that forms you. So these people who are 70 years old and you can tell they're angry all the time, they just wear it on their face. And then you're at the grocery store and they run into you with their shopping cart and they're ticked off. Like, that didn't happen overnight. Also, they never said, you know what? I want to wind up a really closed off, angry, frustrated old person. That's my goal in life. Nobody says that. It's just the accumulation of what you've been concentrating on your whole life. So if you put your mind on things that give life, I'm talking about literally memorizing scripture. I'm talking about continuing to bring God back into your consciousness, continuing to talk with him in a real way. That makes all the difference in the world. That will determine who you're becoming. And it starts now. You can't just start later. Like, it matters now. So I always emphasize that. Your attention is everything. What you're putting your attention on today will determine who you're going to be tomorrow.
Well, as we're kind of progressing our way towards like those six decisions, you write a lot about in the sort of the introductory chapters about the keeper of the garden, about men taking responsibility. Would you care to define what it means, what responsibility means?
Yeah, well, let me put it, I think people have an implicit idea about what it means to take responsibility. In Adam's case, there's an enemy within that he allowed in. And he's supposed to protect her from it, and he doesn't. He doesn't do anything about it. He had a job to do, and the result is devastation. That is a failure of masculinity. What's awesome, though, and here's also what I talk about in terms of taking responsibility. I encourage guys to take responsibility for their spiritual lives. And this is not a guilt trip at all. I'm encouraging guys, because we can get ashamed of ourselves because of our own sin, the habits we get caught up in, the bad stuff, the bad thoughts, the traps. We know what we're talking about. And what happens is, what I keep telling guys is, like, do not let shame chase you away from your relationship with God. Even if you're caught up in something evil, keep talking to him. You keep falling into this trap. You keep doing this thing that you know is wrong. You keep having this pattern of thought that's wrong. Keep talking to God. Do not stop. The worst thing you can do is cower in shame and not have anything to do with him anymore. Continuing to talk with him will help you change and become a different sort of person. And you'll become the sort of person, honestly, that can say no to some of that immaturity and some of that sin that you were falling in these traps. But you have no chance if you don't continue to talk with God about it and everything else in life. So I encourage guys, like, every day, every morning, I do this every morning. I'm talking with God, honestly, about stuff when I take the dog out. Even if I'm caught up in something where I'm like, I could be really discouraged about it, I'm not going to stop. So I think taking responsibility for your own spiritual life, that's the wellspring of everything in your life for the rest of your life. That's where it's going to come from, as you continuing to pursue him. The awesome thing about Adam, he was ashamed of himself, right? Because he knew he blew it. God comes looking for him, and God says, Adam, where are you? It's actually a lament. God's saying, we used to walk together, but now you're trying to hide from me. Don't. And then on the way out of the garden, God goes with them. He doesn't abandon them. He goes with them, and he makes clothes for them to cover their shame. And those clothes aren't just any clothes. The actual Hebrew word there is kehoneth. Royal priestly garments is what it means. God covers them like a king and a queen, even though they blew it. Like, he still wants to be with you. You may have blown it. In fact, I know you have. I have. Like, but the worst thing that we can do is to not take responsibility for, like, continuing to talk and walk with God. That's the way we're actually going to grow up. So I hate it when I see guys get caught up in things and then they walk away in shame because they don't want to pray anymore or something. Like, just, you got to press through that. You got to keep growing.
I've had friends, I myself have like struggled with shame, and it just seems like something men struggle with.
Totally.
And that's like the core of the gospel is the release of shame, isn't it?
Yes. Like, he still wants to walk with you. That's the thing. Like, we can be, oh, but you don't know. I did this. I did that. I think this. I have this habit in private. I've got this other. Like, you have no clue. I'm like, he still wants to walk with you.
Wow.
That's the amazing thing. I'm not saying that those things aren't bad or those things aren't injurious to our lives or our spiritual life. Like, but he wants to keep walking with you. And as you do that, you become a different sort of person. Your desires start to change. That's what's wild. So instead of having to ratchet up the willpower every single time, your desires start to change, you become a different sort of person, and it's not that big of an issue anymore. There's where the hope comes from, but it'll never happen if you don't continue to be honest with them and talk with them. And in the meantime, while you're still struggling with this stuff, there's other areas that you can work on with him. And he wants to keep growing you up. But it's not going to happen if you walk off because you're ashamed of yourself. And what'll usually happen, and you probably know this too, like usually in shame, that's when we start rationalizing or justifying our behavior. Or maybe God doesn't even exist. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. So who knows? We'll do that to justify what we're doing instead of seeking him out and growing up.
My guest today is Brant Hansen. He's the radio host and the author of The Men We Need and The Young Men We Need, seeking to, you know, inform men about how to pursue biblical masculinity. You write about six decisions a man has to make to take responsibility for his character and to grow in godliness. Would you care to outline those for us?
A couple we talked about, which is like, mm-hmm. Decide today who you're going to be tomorrow. And that, again, that's all about where you are paying attention. That is proactive. You have to decide you're going to put your attention on the good stuff, or that other stuff will form you. You're going to be discipled by someone. It needs to be the life-giving stuff. Okay, so that's one of them. We talked about taking responsibility for your spiritual life, not walking away in shame. Other ones I talked about was making sure that the vulnerable people around you feel secure because you're there. This is big too, because I'm not a big athlete or anything. I'm not a hunter. I have neurological problems. I can't see very well. You don't want me out there hunting like that. So a lot of the guy stuff is just not my thing. But my wife feels secure. And a lot of it, it's not just, like I mentioned some guy who wrote about this. He said, you can pat yourself on the back and say, as a husband, well, my wife knows if anybody ever tried to break in this home, you know, I'd make them pay the price. If somebody tried to break in, there's an intruder, I would defend. And you can pat yourself on the back for that. But this is bigger than that. And this guy said, I thought this was so insightful. He said, you know what? That intruder scenario doesn't happen that often. What really happens, most of the time, the intruder is me with my sarcasm or my words. Or my lack of words, I can be injurious to my wife. I can make her feel insecure. My lack of gentleness, my tone of voice. That hit me when I read that. I put that in the book too, but like it hit me and I thought, that's something I can work on. I can make her feel secure with the tone of my voice. There's so much to this, but it's brilliant. It's a great way to make a marriage thrive. She knows I'm willing. If something happens, I'm willing to defend her physically. She knows that. But most of life is words, honestly. So that's one way that you make people feel secure around you, is by building them up instead of tearing them down, not being sarcastic, not cutting, being really merciful. That's just golden to bring peace to a home. By the way, this goes for younger guys too, and the young men we need. Like, how you treat your mom, same thing. Your little sister. You can build them up or you can make them feel insecure. You can make them feel threatened by you. But if you do, you're failing as a man. If you build them up and make them feel secure, you're succeeding. Now you're getting it. Like, now we're talking. You're using what you have, your strength, your intelligence, your words, to make the vulnerable feel secure around you.
I mean, obviously growth does not depend on our wives. And we like to think of the women in our lives being like wives, but it's a general thing. It's for like, it's all women.
Absolutely. But I think there's something about, let's say, for instance, a man, generally speaking, I mean, people generally know this, 95% of us know that men are stronger than women as a general rule. So we have the potential to really inflict damage. And in fact, that's why a lot of women are afraid of men, is because men can be so awful and overpowering. The same thing goes, honestly, with tone of voice. A man has a voice, if we want to look back in, you know, just primal terms, like to roar, to scare somebody off who's a threat, you know, who's coming into the village. Like you can really be intimidating with your voice. And women are very dialed in auditorially. They're better listeners. They're better hearers than men for reasons that make sense. Like to be dialed into a baby's cry more so than we are. They're more sensitive. Not bad, not good, not weak, but we have the capacity to really be scary to women. And certainly they tend to be more vulnerable to men than men to women in this way. So it is especially important to us, and that we use our strength and our tone of voice, everything, to defend them, not to scare them.
One of the decisions, actually the first one you mentioned, is forsaking the fake and relishing the real. What do you mean by that?
Well, okay, so this is a trap that we can all fall in. I use video games as an example, and I'm not against video games. I enjoy playing FIFA or whatever it is on my PlayStation. It's not just like video games are evil. But they are really fun, and I even note that they're too much fun. Like, they can be a real problem. I mean, I can sit there for hours. I know this from my youth. I could sit there for 12 hours. The sun comes up, sun goes down. I haven't even gone to the bathroom. Like, what happened? Like, it's just so much fun. But what I wanted to present, instead of just coming down on people, to say, look, there's fake stuff that you can do. There's fake work. Video games are fake work. You're doing fake things. Like, you can do World of Warcraft and collect firewood or whatever. It's just fakes. You can play Sims and take out the trash. Like, but it's all like making order out of chaos. It's all accomplishing some mission. It's all something. But it doesn't actually do anything. And I think that's one of the enemy's plans, is like to defeat us, is to make us take that energy that we have to accomplish real things and siphon it off. And here's a trap in our culture, and you know this is true, Spencer. A lot of people be like, hey, as long as I'm not hurting anybody else, what does it matter? There are guys who are shut-ins, basically. They just have their video games, and they don't do anything, and they live in their parents' house. And you could say, well, you know, as long as he's happy, what does it matter? He's not hurting anybody. And my response to that is, you are hurting people because we needed you. God made you with certain gifts, and you're in a setting that nobody else is in your exact context. And you were made to be a part of the kingdom and to defend the innocent and to build something beautiful out here, to create. We needed you. And if you don't show up, it's a loss. That's part of it. Obviously, I talk about pornography too, not as a guilt trip again, but just to say we have a real opportunity. Our culture is awful. No men have ever faced what we face because of technology. Getting off of that, getting away from it is possible. And I talk about how to practical considerations along those lines. In addition to that, like, the potential for our personalities to change once we put that behind us is immense. Like, it's amazing how much more energy guys have when they put that behind them, how much more confident they are socially when they put that behind them. It's just very interesting. So I talk about just not letting the virtual crowd out real life.
It's almost like we're made to live in community with each other. Like you mentioned, we need, you know, men to be active and engage.
We need, for us to grow up, we need real women in our lives to challenge us. That's the thing. The pixels on the screen, the photos or the videos, those women, those aren't actual women. That's a copy of a woman. That's a visual representation of a woman. Those women will not argue with us or challenge us or tell us to grow up or make us think about things differently. And we need that. So my wife has helped me grow up. She's called me out to be a man on many occasions and still does. And it's a wonderful thing. But that won't happen in a virtual setting. That'll never happen.
Well, I think I have just one more question for you. And I'm thinking about, there's a lot more I probably could ask, but I know from my own experience, sometimes it's easy to just jump into a battle and be rash. Is there any advice you would have for discerning what to take responsibility for and how to think about when to jump in and when it's wiser to stay put?
Huh? What do you mean? Like, help me out with more context on that.
I mean, we live in a culture where, you know, there's a lot of perversity, and it's easy to see perversity and then just jump in and say what you're doing is wrong. Like, for instance, right? And to be an arguer kind of a thing. Prudence, it seems to me, like Ecclesiastes says, there's a time for everything, you know, a time to kill and a time to make peace or what have you. So I guess, okay, is this a good time to jump in and do something about this? Or do I need to just have a little more patience and wait for that opportune moment?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a great question. It's a big question. I would say this. I'm amazed at the way Jesus doesn't control people. I mean, he literally allows people to walk away from him, and he doesn't even chase them down and say, hey, let's try that. Like, let me say it this way. Maybe you'll understand. Like, I take my cues from him. I'm trying to be more like that. There's an awful lot in scripture too, in the New Testament, about living quiet lives. This is not about passivity. everybody can be angry and tweet about everything, and people do. And that's, I don't think that's actually a sign of strength or anything. I don't think it's a sign of being at peace. I'm not going to give like a rule on, hey, you should never say something about this or that. I just think it would be really good to focus on your immediate real surroundings and speak into that. That makes sense, because there's tons of perversity, there's tons of awful stuff going on out there. And there's things to be, you could be really angry about all the time. And the same thing, and I travel a lot, and there's things in other countries you don't even know about that you could get really ticked off and think is your responsibility. But I don't think we're made for that. I'd really encourage people to be aware of the people in their actual lives. And that's kind of how I do things on a daily basis, is I ask God to help me be faithful with whoever crosses my path today, and ask him to control what he can control. And I can just that focus on that, if that makes sense. So, but that may be for some people that may be different. Maybe they need to be in the fray on a particular issue, and I support that, but that's just my philosophy anyway.
It requires more understanding and, I guess, prudence. Maybe that's just part of the sanctification process.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think leaning into, I see a lot of people who are very anxious to weigh in on stuff, and they may even be right about the issue, but it's not coming from a place of security and peace, and it's apparent. I really feel like we should double down on peace, actually trusting God, knowing him, not knowing about him, but actually knowing him, and then following his lead in a real way and asking him to guide us. Like, genuinely ask, I'm not just saying religious words, like ask him to make a way for you to have discernment on that stuff. Like, should I weigh in on this or not? Or talk to him about it.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to today's guest, nationally syndicated radio host Brant Hansen, author of The Young Men We Need. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at the same time for another edition of His People.